Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, everybody. It's June 28th, 2010, and this is the Q&A call for the website. And so let's get off with our questions for the day. Let's see here. We're in marriage counseling at this time and have had about 5 sessions working on communication skills, how to be honest and open, which is more for my unfaithful husband and our intimacy issues. I dealt with the affair and online betrayals in the past few sessions. He came clean on some lies during one session. It's a year on June the 2nd from discovery. The disclosure didn't happen until about a month ago. Do you think that it's harmful to not discuss the emotional affairs and the online betrayal's impact on me and the marriage and move on to other things? Do you think learning to properly communicate with honesty is our first step? In my opinion, the ability for the two of you to, in a respectful way, I think, discuss and understand those things is imperative. It depends a little bit on your personality. If you're the type of person that's able to just kind of go on and that's not that big of a deal to you, then, I mean, I don't think it. You can say a one size necessarily fits all. For most individuals, I can say that ability to at least discuss kind of what the impact was, and for your kind of knowing that he really cares what that did to you, for many people, that reassurance that you matter to them and that they're willing to look at that and take whatever time is necessary goes a long way to helping you feel safe enough in the relationship to begin to move forward. Now, at the same time, I say all of that, if you already feel that you've gotten that assurance from him over the past and you're not kind of spinning with questions or doubt and the attachment, your ability to attach with him really wasn't, you weren't really injured by these latest revelations, then there's a chance that you wouldn't need to go back and process through that and you could just move on to other issues within the marriage. I don't know, reading this, if you've actually gone through a 911 marriage, but if you've already gone through a 911 marriage, one of the things that I'll have couples do if there's more disclosure over time is actually go back through some of the exercises, in particular 4, 5, and 6, and just make sure that the two of you touch base around that, make so that you can know that he kind of has what it's done, that there's not, what I don't want is a part of you to feel like you've got to continue educating him about this. And if you feel like you can let it, you've kind of forgiven him and you're just grateful to have that, you can go on, that's all good. Some people can do that. But if you feel like you need to continue letting him know what's happened and you're still clarifying, I really would not, I think, move on to other issues until you at least kind of get that reassurance, that point in time where the two of you know that you're on the same page, you know that he's there for you, you know that he really cares, so that you can quit focusing, and that he understands, so that you can quit focusing on that and then move on to the other marital issues. Here's the second one. Since we're so far from the date of discovery, 1 year, but only a month from the discovery of all the original lies, these things really changed the scope and the depth that he was in the emotional affair to me. He seems to think that he was not attached to her at all while he was promising to me that there was no one else. When I found some suspicious things, he was spending a day and a night in a big city nearby. He canceled it before it happened, but was planning it up until a few days before. We're in marriage counseling. Do you think that 911 marriage or ENS is going to be too much for him right now and will start to close up again? Do you think waiting would be better until we learn to communicate with honesty? If you think that's a good idea, are you having any competitions with it again as it causes death for us right now? Okay, so with 911 or EMS, actually, that typically wouldn't cause someone to close up. Usually what causes someone to close up is where they begin to feel a great deal of shame. One of the things that is just an absolute core value to me is that everybody is treated with dignity. It should not be, nor would I want it to be, in any sort of shaming process. I mean, that would be tragic to me if someone felt shamed in this deal. I think the way that, you know, when you put somebody in 911 marriage or you put somebody in EMS, it actually allows them much more freedom to begin to speak. It doesn't cause them to close up, largely because you're with other couples and he doesn't feel alone. I think one of the things that people who have been unfaithful always find is the amount of kind of dignity that they're actually afforded at these things. And also a sense where instead of feeling judged, they begin to understand maybe some of the whys. And the main thing that we want to provide for a couple is the ability to begin to communicate clearly and openly about what is clearly and openly about I'm sorry, my internet's freaking out here, so this is not a good thing. About what's happened is what we call having that objective conversation about all this. So whether it's 911 marriage or whether it's EMS, I think you would find for your husband's sake that he would be able to actually communicate much easier with you. I don't think he would shut down. In fact, he would probably, I think you'd both feel a lot better at the end of that entire process. Now, for some reason here, I have lost, can anybody hear me still?
I'm a little scratchy, but I can hear you. We can hear you.
Okay, good.
We can hear him.
Okay, good, because I was afraid that maybe TalkShoe had gone down too. I don't know what's causing my problem here. Okay, good. I came back. Something happened to my website there for a second. Thank you, guys. Okay, so this is going to come back and bite me. I love this next question. Thank you, Jeff. At our EMS, I remember Rick mocking the online matchmakers like eHarmony. That surprised me. And it's, I was wondering how I should be helping my kids prepare to make wise and healthy choices concerning a mate, should that day ever come. My advice at this point would be to stay single and not have grandkids and have my kids go through what I've gone through. Well, you know, it's not that I think online matchmakers, by the way, are necessarily all bad. I certainly encourage people at times. I think what I was actually saying is that when people base a relationship on compatibility, that somehow we're going to be able to find someone that ultimately satisfies my deepest needs, then there's an illusion there. And so what can happen over time is that we're not as compatible. And if that occurs, then, you know, is that still a good and healthy marriage? Is there, if compatibility is the reason they got together and they're no longer compatible, are they going to continue to stay together? So I think that what I would teach and what I had worked really hard at teaching my kids is that marriage is very difficult. You need to have very good, realistic expectations that it really is about learning how to love. I think they need to be given specific techniques on what does that, or training on what that looks like, how to begin to appreciate another person, that the right rituals need to be set up. The danger comes, I think, when someone gets into a marriage and they just think that somehow that it's just going to work, that monogamy is just going to occur, that somehow we're different than everyone else in the world, and our relationship will ultimately be different. Because when someone falls in love with someone else, their ability to, I think, be objective about what the difficulties within that relationship, what they might be, are really skewed because we kind of overlook it. I mean, I'm thinking about somebody I was doing premarital with last month, and in their premarital counseling, it was interesting. They actually came in after they had gotten married just a couple of months, and they kind of yet to kind of to figure out what the problems are going to be because, you know, they're less than 2 months away from the honeymoon and they still feel really good about things. But I can tell you from the first session that they've got radically different views on money and the importance of money and how about saving and not saving and spending and what, you know, that's going to create some unsolvable issues for the two of them. They have some pretty different views about faith and religion and belief systems. I can tell you that's going to present some unsolvable problems for them. They have different views on how many kids. Now, they would tell you that they'd like to have. I can tell you that they believe they're strongly compatible, but the reason they believe they're compatible is largely because of the intense feelings and emotions that they have for each other. So they've got some work to do to begin to compromise around some things, but to also learn how to maintain a gaze of to see the other person, to appreciate the other person, to look at how do I love the other person rather than looking at how does the other person make me feel about me, and to learn those rituals of leaving and coming together and to have a vision for their life and where are they ultimately going, and to let it be about something bigger than their happiness. And so if you don't teach your kids, I think maybe some different ways of looking at marriage other than just it's there to make me happy, then in the long run I think that they might have problems. But, you know, if you can find some really good people on some place like eHarmony, a lot of the matchmaking sites. But just remember, it's not about compatibility. Just let's try to learn and be realistic about that marriage is God's primary people growing machine. It's the place where we learn to love, and hopefully your children will kind of figure that out over time as they come into relationships, and you can share with them the things that you've learned through this process. Okay. My mate went to his first NA meeting, and it was co-ed. Do you go to co-ed groups? As a newly recovering SA, it doesn't feel smart to me. We've discussed and wanted your advice. If anything, it makes me scared and anxious to know he's at a meeting with other vulnerable and wounded women. That is the quintessential target for, for SA, and they are sharing very personal parts of their life. It makes me uncomfortable on many levels. I'm already jealous. He was sexually aroused and sharing his personal life with his AP for all those years. Do I have to endure this too? I have no tolerance for any other woman in his life right now but me. Typically, you know, I would say that the purpose of a meeting isn't to be hooking up. In fact, in 12-step work, we have what's called the 13th step, which is just about that. You know, I would rather somebody be in a co-ed meeting than not be at a meeting. You might rather have somebody be, you know, not be in a meeting rather than be in a co-ed meeting. A lot of times CR, Celebrate Recovery, is co-ed, but it breaks into, it'll ultimately break into other types of groups. The main thing about any place that any of us goes, whether unfaithful or hurt, is that we maintain proper boundaries and we learn to look at people the right way. Avoidance in the long run is not the ultimate solution. It's really kind of learning to have a different gaze, a different look, at this stage, maybe not looking period is important. I think that you and your husband would probably need to work out some very specific rules of how to handle things while he's there. The problem is, obviously, if it's too much of a trigger for you, then whether or not he has a problem may be irrelevant. Figuring out what to do to help you first, kind of feel secure enough where he can do the recovery work when he's recovered first. So it just depends a little bit on the situation. I just think that depending on what is being discussed, if he were in an SA group, not an NA group, that's dealing with sexuality, I would say that would be a much higher risk than an NA group where someone's just talking about powerlessness. But he would also need to maintain his own boundaries and things. So maybe that's something that the two of you can talk about. Let's see. Besides not thinking about it, how can I deal with my feelings of jealousy that my mate told me he was sexually aroused by his AP? Even if it was counterfeit, even if he is disgusted, even if the sexual arousal was also disgusting to him at the time, it still happened, and he still had those feelings that made him be unfaithful. I tell myself many bad things about myself because he felt this way for her and couldn't stop from acting on it over and over. How do I not tell myself those bad things? You know, I think one of the hardest things for the hurt spouse is not to personalize and to think that it's really about them. I mean, in my opinion, I would have ended up doing what I did regardless of who I was married to, and you probably already heard this. So the problem never is, I think, the other person, I mean, your mate. I mean, the problem is a personal problem in a way that you cope and you deal with things. If, you know, your husband had been married to someone else and had an affair with you, he probably would have been aroused at that point. Is that different than what he had for his mate? I mean, I just think that people act out with things that ultimately arouse them. Acting out is very much like putting jet fuel in a lawnmower. If someone's already addicted to that sort of high-intensity stimulation, when they get into a marriage, there's a part of them that's going to be still longing for jet fuel, but in reality, that's not what they really need. I mean, what they really need to do is learn how to connect. The problem with the sex addict isn't that they're aroused by another person, it's that they have no clue how to really connect in a loving sort of way because they never developed that part of them. That part of them was delayed, most likely because of acting out at an early age or sexual abuse. Any number of things could have delayed their sexual development. And so they never learned how to connect their heart to their genitals. They never learned what a loving gaze really looks like. They probably always attach their needs for love and to be loved and their need to grow closer to a source of love to something that, again, is jet fuel rather than kind of learning a deeper sense of meaning, a deeper sense of love, a deeper sense of connection. So what happens to the person going into recovery is now they have to begin to learn, how do I really connect in an appropriate way? The thing is, their acting out only shows that they already had the old way down, and their old way of acting out really had nothing to do with you. Jealousy, in my mind, actually says far more about the person who's jealous than it does about what another person does or doesn't do. I think I've shared this online before on this forum, but when I went through a huge jealousy point with Stephanie, you know, one of my good friends pointed out that really it had nothing to do with what Stephanie was doing. It had everything to do with kind of where my heart was and what I would have been doing if I had been in her place. So the jealousy was really a projection of myself into a situation. And I think that probably if you look at your own heart, you're kind of hyper-focus on what he did, really, it's far more interesting to kind of flip back and look a little bit about what does it say the core of my sense of meaning is, or my motivations are, and what would I be doing in those situations. And so it's, I think that's probably a piece for some individual work for you to kind of get down to what is at the core of the jealousy. Because the core of the jealousy, I don't think, is probably your mate. It probably has more to do with your own personal wounds and a lack of security and a lack of self-acceptance and a lack of self-love and a lack of a sense of dignity. Because where there's a great deal of confidence and dignity, and then I think the jealousy is gone. But where we begin as maybe the hurt spouse to kind of objectify ourselves, maybe dehumanize ourselves and do a comparative analysis against the affair partner, it probably is far more about potentially just a lack of self-acceptance and a lack of dignity and a lack of, just self-love or self-respect. So hopefully that we'll be able to work through some things like that and help you out. Another one about STDs. I've had a full STD screening since finding out about my husband's affair. He didn't use protection. My doctor asked me to come back in 6 months to do another HIV test. What about my 8-month-old baby? They had sex while I was pregnant. Does he need a test? If yes, how do I ask for one without telling them my situation? My mate claims he only had sexual intercourse with her 3 times, but I don't know if I believe him. And even if he's not lying, my sister caught an STD having unprotected sex only once. I guess with a child, and I may be trying to check to see what I'm saying here, but it would seem to me if you're negative, then the probabilities of your child having anything would be pretty much non-existent. I don't see how the child could catch something ultimately if you hadn't caught it. If I understand kind of the placenta and the membrane and how all of that occurs, but that is certainly beyond my expertise. And so being able to ask a doctor, if you were negative, could the child have been exposed and potentially caught something? I think all you can do is maybe ask that question of an MD, and that one is beyond my knowledge base. Probably on my pay grade, they might say. But hopefully, when you go back for that 6-month test, you'd be able to maybe get the answer to that question. But again, my initial thought is if you're negative, I would think the child would also be negative. But if you ended up being positive on something, then for sure I think you've got to have the baby checked. But maybe even talking to your pediatrician would be able to help that a little bit. And how do you ask for one without telling them my situation? You know what? I don't know how you would do that. I mean, part of me would say if it could give you peace of mind and you'd like a test, I'd talk to your OB, explain the circumstance, explain that your mate had unprotected sex during the pregnancy, and that the two of you are working through it, you're doing fine in your recovery, but you just want to make sure that the baby is safe, and I would ask that pediatrician then to run that test. That would just be my thought. So it looks like that is all of the questions for today. Those were great questions today, guys. Thank you very much. And Remember, we do have a EMS weekend coming up in just a couple of weeks. We're also going to be at Smart Marriages next week. But we still have this phone call. We shouldn't have a problem with that. And I'll be on the 5th. So we're not going to skip the phone call, even though it's the day after. At this point, we're not going to skip. Stephanie may tell me later that we are going to skip. If we do, we will. Anyway, I hope you guys have a great week, and I look forward to talking to you next Monday. To healing. Bye-bye.